All right, welcome back to the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, the Mullet, Adam O'Brien, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. And coming to you live and another live episode through the Facebook page for you guys to check out. And this is obviously going to be a few weeks before it is put on FPN's podcast channel. Tonight's special is one people have been asking for and one we're definitely going to be celebrating. That is, of course, the amazing Japanese martial artist, actor, and all-around amazing artist at the end of the day, Sho Kasugi. And we're going to be covering his films and, of course, his life here on tonight's podcast, episode number 66 of the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Welcome to Phantom Podcast Network. This is Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s action cinema. Celebrating the heroes of yesterday, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Van Damme, all the way down to, of course, the big great action films that we all enjoyed on VHS, and of course, Betamax, with the loves of American Ninja, all the way through to Cyborg Cop and beyond. Here at Phantom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast, join Adam O'Brien as we celebrate action movie cinema.
Episode number 66 of the Lethal Mullet Podcast begins now. I'm your host, the Lethal Mullet himself, Adam O'Brien, and we are going to be looking at one of the greatest inspirations for my martial arts career and martial arts path as well, when it came to just the magic of what martial arts can do. That's, of course, Sho Kasugi, or better known as Shoichi Kasugi, and we'll go into his life and celebrate that on tonight's podcast, folks. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're also going to be talking about a couple of Blu-rays that I picked up this week, which I'm sure in the US, you guys have had these for years. We're talking, of course, Uncommon Valor. That's got a great history itself, too. And no doubt, I think we'll get a few of the Lethal Mullet Podcast crowd from FPN on to chat about that in a future episode, because there's quite a bit of truth to something real that happened with that, which we'll go into in the news segment very, very soon. We're going to begin looking in that. We're also going to be chatting a little bit about an upcoming show, which is going to be a lot of fun, because we're about to do The Brotherhood of the Wolf, which we'll be talking about for a little while. But when Lee Fillingsness and I cover that on here, we're going to really be looking at the historical part of that too. Also, obviously, the action movie itself, which is, you know, it's a historical one as well as a fantasy. There's a little bit of a Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon aspect to it too, because of the style of martial arts that's done it. It's classical, but it's also very much in that wire gag sort of area too. It's an interesting film nonetheless. But before we do that, let's let you know how you can subscribe to this show and many others like it here on the podcast.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, my name is Gowan. Follow the Lethal Mullet here on Phantom Podcast Network's master channel at fpnet.podbean.com, or subscribe on the Podbean app, where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. New look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. And also check out The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Lethal Mullet. You can also check out this show and all the others like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. Make sure you follow me, the Lethal Mullet, at the Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
So, if you're trying to subscribe to the show, the best thing to do is jump onto fbnet.podbean.com, which is where our podcast feed can be found. Of course, you can find this show. You can find Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast on there. You can also find on there the amazing Culture Clash, where Kevin and Kyle, the co-founders of this podcast channel, go through all there is in pop culture and more weekly here on the show. And they go really through and let people know what's new, what's cool. They talk about merch and much more. There's also, of course, the Alfred Hitchcock Show we've got on there too, The Good Evening. We've also got Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast. We've also got What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with Derek and Scott. Great show, by the way, folks. Also, you have the Mullet Guild, which is on a little bit of a hiatus until we get the Dune trailer. And then myself, Scotty, and of course, Kyle Wagner are all going to be on there chatting about the new Dune trailer. Well, we will be told that this is coming out and it's going to be a huge trailer. It's going to show us little bits and pieces. The actors are already talking about it because obviously they've seen it. But it's before September, so it's coming either this week or next week, folks. So stay tuned. It's going to be massive. With that, it's going to really put a few star franchises, let's just put that on alert, because let's face it, the director himself, Denis Villeneuve, has yet to make an absolute dumper of a movie yet. He has made very interesting films all the way through. Not everyone's cup of tea, but very, very interesting films nonetheless. And of course, Blade Runner 2049 shows that he can obviously make one with a bit of a slow burn that's interesting, keeps you going, still gets the action and more in a sci-fi setting. So can't wait for that. It's going to be great. Also, you can also find on there too, of course, Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast with myself and fellow Fantha Tracker, the one, the only, Mark Newbold. And we cover basically the deep dive into Star Trek from the past. We look at everything from TNG, TOS, right back to Enterprise as well. I mean, who doesn't love Enterprise? I mean, Enterprise is great. We celebrated on that show too. And of course, you got Union Fed on there too, which looks at the brand new Star Trek and of course, Orville. And that's of course with Kyle and of course, Kevin and a few other guests that they have in there too. All on FPN. So go and check that out. You can check out me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet here on the Facebook page. Also, you can check it out on Twitter and of course, Instagram on that same handle. So go and check it out. But, yeah, here we go, Brian Snook. Hey, buddy, how you doing? And I totally agree. The biggest thing is, June, it's like he said, so June will rock, but people won't go and see it. And that's the thing is, I think I have to agree with him. The biggest part of June's past is David Lynch film, which has kind of burnt people out. It really has. I mean, some of us like it. I actually enjoyed it. Even though it's a disjointed film that doesn't really follow the source material. But for me, I have faith at least in Denis Villeneuve's going to give us something interesting, and it's particularly visually. People that are in the know already are saying that this is a very, very different film and people are not ready for what they're going to see on screen. And epic. Just the size, the scale of this thing is apparently much larger than we're ready for. Much larger than Star Wars in some respects too, which would be interesting. But again, Star Wars and Star Trek and Dune are all different styles of science fiction. And I think this is a far more adult and dark take on sci-fi, without a doubt. So that'll be obviously interesting when it comes out too. So with that, we're going to lead into, of course, the news segment. Now it's time for the latest action news from the cinema and martial arts movies and more, all here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, so what I have picked up, as I mentioned in the intro, is, of course, Uncommon Valor. Now, this has been available on DVD. So there's the copy we've got through Umbrella Entertainment, which is a DVD and Blu-ray developer out here in Australia, I think. And so it's very hard to get a hold of these, usually, as is Paramount Pictures that made this one too, obviously. Ted Kotcheff directed this film, director of First Blood, obviously, as well, starring Gene Hackman, Robert Stack, Fred Ward as well, Reb Brown, Randall Tex Cobb. The awesome Randall Tex Cobb, Patrick Swayze, Tim Thomason, Future Cop, or Trances? I really still don't get why they called it Trances in the States when you could have had Future Cop, which is a far better title. See again, Australia, g'day mate, how you going? Getting the better title. I've got to say it is a far better title. and of course, we also have, in this one, the American Ninja himself turns up. That's, of course, Michael Dudikoff turns up in this one for about 2 seconds, folks, or even 30 seconds, something like that. but it's a great film. Now, the film itself, we're going to go into more detail in a future episode in next month sometime. And we're going to be looking at the influence that it had, obviously, and around the time. Obviously, this is at a time when we had First Blood out as well. There's a lot of films going the POW route, trying to get people to return from Vietnam and stuff like that. Obviously, Missing in Action was another one with Chuck Norris. I think they made three of those, if I remember right. Missing in Action 1 and 2, and 2 was meant to be the first one, and 1 was meant to be the second one, and then they flipped around in the time that Canon were making those films. And they were fun for what they were. And then, of course, you got Braddock, Missing in Action 3, which followed it with that humongous grenade-launching thing on the top of the G3 assault rifle that, of course, he used at the end of it, Chuck Norris, not knowing what that rifle was doing. Well, who knows? Anyway, but it was a hell of a lot of fun to watch, too. Now, with those, obviously, Uncommon Valor is probably the best of those because you really get a chance to see, first of all, what Gene Hackman's character is doing. And the great thing about it is you get to see he's trying to obviously find his son who is lost in action, obviously missing in somewhere in Vietnam, doesn't know whether he's alive or dead. And of course, he wants to spend his time trying to get him home, whichever way he can. With the aid of Robert Stack, who's a multi-billionaire, trillionaire, whatever you call it, he gives them the funding to basically put a team together to go over and get the kids back, basically his own son as well. And it's great because you get this old team of the son to come together. Of course, you're starting with Fred Ward, Reb Brown. These two are fantastic in it too because there's that sort of buddy thing that's going on there that really brings them together. You know, the guys that haven't seen each other for years. And they do bring in the PTSD and stuff like that to a certain extent and show it realistically, I think, in the film. Even though, at the end of the day, it is an action film. So, you know, it's taken seriously to a certain extent. And a little bit like First Blood. You know, it is given a very good amount of seriousness when it comes to that too. And then, of course, we have, as the team gets to Tim Thomason playing a fantastic role in it too. And, of course, Patrick Swayze kind of playing this young up-and-coming guy whose father is missing in action in Vietnam and he wants to help out. He is one that was basically kicked out of, I think, the Rangers, I think, in it. And so, you know, he has a bit of a temper and it's the senior veterans here who really give him a teaching as well as him teaching them new jungle warfare tactics and stuff like that in it too. And it's interesting because it's a series of veterans in this too because we have Gene Hackman's character who is somebody that was a Korean veteran. So each one is teaching the next generation lessons and vice versa backwards as well too. They're all, as a team, learning from each other, which I think is fantastic. Something that probably isn't done as much in these kinds of films. And then it's played out quite well. So you have basically the gathering of the team. The second half is them getting together and basically putting together a not only a training regimen, but also a plan of how they're going to attack this in Vietnam to get the POWs out. And then we actually get to see that. And of course, like any good plan, 10 seconds in, nothing works. And so they have to go through and they lose all their munitions, armaments and stuff like that. So they have to go around and literally get new trucks, choppers, the works, and then basically use World War II age weaponry, which is actually pretty cool. They get to use, instead of the M16s of the time and M60s, all that sort of stuff, they get to use Tommy guns, BARs, and of course M1 Garands, which of course Gene Hackman's character would have known as a veteran from, of course, the conflict in Korea and the Chosin Reservoir, which is where his characters basically had his biggest amount of conflict from. So again, interesting film. It's probably the best of that era. I think it's just as good as First Blood, but it's a little bit more realistic than First Blood as well. And again, great film. The Blu-ray itself is, in parts, really quite well done as far as picture quality. The sound's much better than the DVD that we got out, released out here in Australia. But the one thing, the DVD had a terrible picture. So for me, it was probably just lifted straight from, obviously, the print that they had, whether it's from the VHS or whatever. But in this version, far better. So I've got to say, the picture's brighter, clearer. The only times it's not that clear is when they actually do the mission at the end. So I'll have to knock a few points off my review stars after that. But all in all, on the Hallenbach scale, this version is 3 out of 5. So go and check it out. All right, folks, let's get into it. We're going to into the news segment now. And we're going to chat about the one, the only, Shulkasugi. Well, news and reviews, let's just put it that way.
All righty, mate.
Time to go down to the pub for a pint. Chat, action movies and more, here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. So, Shoichi Kasugi, born in 1948, in, of course, Japan. And he's basically one of the greats when it comes to not only martial arts, but of the era of the 1980s, really showing off the potential of martial arts. Some of the mystical side in some of those movies too, but also just, I suppose, what the body's capable. At the end of the day, martial arts is all about body mechanics, science, all that sort of stuff too. And he's trained since early age too, so he's one of these guys that you know, always had his foot in the door of martial arts. He was born in Minato, Tokyo, Japan, and basically studied everything from karate. So he's done Shindo Jinin Ryu Karate. He's also done Kendo, Judo, Iaido, Kobudo, Aikido, and Ninjutsu. So as we mentioned on the previous show, you know, there's a lot of different martial arts that also link together quite well. And you can see some of these styles that's in there. So styles like Aikido and Ninjutsu, the core of some of those mechanics in the martial arts goes back to Daito Ryu Aiki Jiu-Jitsu, which is as far back as the samurai times. So a lot of those taijutsu, stuff like that, was you know, spread from that. So a lot of those, if you study those styles, it's easy to pick up those because there's a very similar sort of feel to the mechanics of it. Iaido, obviously, the drawing of the sword, and of course the cutting of bamboo and stuff like that is a beautiful art to watch. If you haven't seen that before, worth checking out. It's amazing. And of course, judo. Now, judo, oh wow. Judo is one of the greats when it comes to, obviously, you know, competition and obviously the throwing and stuff like that. Very, very popular as far as like back in the early days of martial arts in England, America, and worldwide. When it was really getting credits, it was that and, of course, jiu-jitsu all the way back in the 1930s, 40s, as that started to spread after the World War II. In particular, it was getting popular from a lot of the troops that were going around after the war and basically learning in the traditional schools and stuff like that too. And of course, in Japan, always been popular as a martial art there too. Kendo, there's another great martial art too that obviously he studied here. And what's great about that is Kendo, obviously, you have the shinais and stuff like that, which are bamboo swords, but they have a lot of give in them too. So it's interesting, you know, it's a different type of school of sword play than, say, Western fencing and stuff like that. But very, very interesting to watch, obviously, too, with the headgear, the armor and stuff like that too. So at the age of 19, Kasugi left Japan and he actually went to the US to study. He was studying economics over there and from there too, obviously, continued his time of martial arts. So it was quite interesting to see his time of martial arts over there be also, you know, continuing his karate in Shito Ryu and Shotokan. Of course, very, very popular martial art as well. I think one of the great things about that too is that him bringing that to Japan, from Japan to the US, he was able to give his experiences in the dojos there to obviously when he went to LA. And he'd also study there Korean Taekwondo and Chinese Xingyi Quan or Xingyi Chan. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly too. Shokasugi, obviously, being an actor too through the 1970s, and was kind of like from some of the interviews that he's given out over the last few years after Ninja Assassin, he let people know that obviously he'd been out there trying to be an actor for many years and had picked up little roles in films like The Godfather Part Two, and whether it's TV, vice versa, he's getting his way up the ladder in bit parts, but nothing really took off until obviously 1981. Which you're going to get into very, very soon. He's also the father of two amazing actors and martial artists who you'll know from, obviously, some of the films that we're going to be talking about today as well. And that is, of course, Kane Kasugi and Shane Kasugi, which are in a number of his films. And again, Kane in particular has taken off into the ninja field, working with Scott Adkins as well. And that's, of course, fantastic to see that he's continued his father's tradition as well. And you can see that in some of the films, obviously, too, now. And there's actually a really good interview with Kane recently in The Art of Action with, of course, Scott Adkins. And that was really, really well produced and put together. And again, great show, folks. If you haven't seen The Art of Action on YouTube, Scott's got recently, obviously, Michael Jai White's been on the show. He's had Tony Jaa on there as well. And recently, Chad Stahelski from, of course, the amazing John Wick films. And also, he was in, obviously, The Matrix as the stunt double for Neo. So all of those sort of coming together, really well put together. But, of course, the interviewees go through their own experiences, martial arts, action films, but also you get to see some of their, you know, the different things that they've done outside of that field too, and what their influences were. Why did they join those? And, of course, Chad talks about his background in judo as well. That's the first thing that started out. You'll notice in a lot of those John Wick films, you get to see a little bit of that jiu-jitsu and judo being done by Keanu Reeves in those as well too. Kane, of course, is on there talking about his experiences, and particularly, I think it was Taekwondo is one of his too, so obviously got that through his father as well. And, of course, the films that you get to see them in as well is Revenge of the Ninja, Pray for Death, Black Eagle, and, of course, Journey of Honor, which is, of course, better known as Shogun Maeda out here in Australia. Very, very hard to find. Yet another film. Very hard to find. A lot of these films just aren't available. Whether it's distribution out here in Australia is very, very tough. Always has been. And even if you're trying to get those films, they're just not available. So, again, you've got to try and get them through Amazon or overseas somehow, get a different region version of those too. A little bit harder with the Blu-rays, but you definitely could get the free region, the different region DVDs. Again, even Black Eagle, I'm trying to find a copy of. Very hard to find. Rage of Honor, another one. Very, very hard to find out here in Australia too. So, but let's have a look at a bit of his catalogue first too. So one of the first ones, of course, as we talked about, he had a small part in The Godfather Part 2. Bruce Lee fights back from the grave. He plays the role of Suzuki in, which was back in 1976. He's still playing those parts in Bad News Bears Go to Japan. He plays a kata demonstrator in there too, probably karate or something like that. And again, these are extra roles at this stage. Then it wasn't until he played the role of Hasegawa in, of course, Enter the Ninja. Now, of course, Enter the Ninja is this one right here. And of course, the ninja in question in white here is, of course, Franco Nero. Again, amazing role that was very last-minute casting after, obviously, the original actor didn't work out. And anyway, but the role of Hasegawa, which is the villain in the film, is played by Sho, and we really get to see not only first the ninja really front and foremost in the actual movie itself, we get to really see the weaponry, what they're capable. It's a bit of a fanciful view, obviously, of ninjutsu as well. But it's showing that mystical with the action, but also some really good kata demonstrations too by Sho, doing everything, all the different weapons, the kama, the nunchaku, the sai, the tonfa. He goes through the whole list, the small ninja sword known as the ninja to or the shinobi katana. And of course, in this series, you know, you don't really know whether the swords were just made by Hollywood or whether they're for legit. There's many stories over the years, even when I was studying ninjutsu, there was stories whether the swords themselves were just literally ones that they'd stolen, the ninja had stolen off samurai or different armories, and they just literally chopped almost half a foot off the end of it and just made a smaller version of the katana, not quite as small as the wakizashi, but just so they can put it on their back, reef it out, and not have it stuck in the roof when they pull it out. Because the katana is quite a long sword to be able to be in those small roofed houses in Japan, at that time. So a lot of the time it was smaller blades that can reef them out. But of course, some smithies probably just round the back to that sort of height. Of course, it's a little bit different in the film. You've got this blade that's a little bit straighter, still curved, with a square guard and a much longer handle on them than the regular size swords of that size too. So again, anyway, that's the ninja talk used in just about every ninja film, particularly from Canon. Maybe it's Canon pictures that made those, who knows. But they're very cool. And of course, back in the 80s, when you were reading, whether it's Ninja Magazine or Black Belt Magazine, you'd open up all the different catalogs in them inside. It was black and white catalogs or vice versa. And you'd just say, right, you can buy the uniforms. You can buy the sai, the nunchaku, the ninja stars, the shuriken, throwing knives, the kusarigama, the manriki kusari, all that sort of stuff was all in there. And of course, in these films, you get to see it done too. So Enter the Ninja was followed soon by this bad boy right here, of course, Revenge of the Ninja, probably the best out of those films too. Because in this one, we got to see
you know, show actually play the lead role in this too. And it's done really well. I think even though Enter the Ninja is probably the better film scenery-wise, and just the overall martial arts play too, because he doesn't hold back as Hasegawa no matter what. But in this, he plays Cho Osaki, and obviously he's somebody that's really well-versed in all martial arts in this. You get to see the kids in this as well, Kane. And we get to see, again, an array of weaponry that's just amazing. And, of course, the end fight in a tennis court on top of a building. You know, it's brilliant. And it's really, again, for a double pack, folks, that's a double DVD, double Blu-ray packing, yet. Brilliant. So if you haven't checked that out, check it out. It's worth it. Then the third film he did for Canon at that time was called Ninja 3 The Domination, which I haven't seen since VHS. So to be honest, I can't really review it as such because I still can't remember half of it. But he played Goro Yamada, which I believe was kind of like a spiritual apparition ninja. And it was a different sort of take on ninja at that time. Again, they'd pretty much done everything by the time they'd done Revenge of the Ninja, as far as what they could do on screen. After that, he played Spike Shinobi in Nine Deaths of the Ninja, which was kind of a little bit more of a commando take on martial arts. I really enjoyed that one, probably even more than the others. Very unique weaponry. Again, he was really mixing it up when it came to weapons and pushing it further and further, and I really enjoyed what they were doing there too with it too. That was in 1985, along with, of course, probably arguably the best of his early era, playing Akira Saito, and of course that was in Pray for Death. Now, Pray for Death's really interesting because we not only get to see, obviously, again, another great ninja film from him too. And this was probably a little bit more, I think, hardcore. You know, he's playing the hero again, but he's also what his family goes through in it really pushes him again. And really, this is the revenge of the ninja, this film. and what he does in it is fantastic. Well worth checking out. And, of course, we get to see kind of a ninja armor on it as well. If you've seen it, I think this in particular has probably influenced the look of Shredder in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because obviously we get a little bit of chainmail and stuff like that around the place too, plus armor, which I don't think was really something you'd seen in ninja films at that point. Then he played in 87 Shiro Tanaka in Rage of Honor. Again, one I'm trying to track down because I have not seen this one in years, but I remember enjoying it too. In 88, he did Aloha Summer as Yukinaga Konishi. And also, of course, Black Eagle with Jean-Claude Van Damme. Now, this is a really interesting film too, because kind of it was moving away from the ninja stuff and more into more of a spy film, more CIA operative behind enemy lines sort of thing, and shot in the Middle East. And it's really, really well done. This is a film that I still enjoy watching. I watched it recently on streaming. And it's one that I actually thought was earlier in his career. I thought it was like 84, something like that. So to watch it again and realize it's a little bit later, it's 1988, after he'd really done, the five or six ninja films that he'd done. And it's strong. I mean, it really is. And he's up against a young Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's just come out of, obviously, heading into No Retreat, No Surrender as a villain role in that. And it's good. Two karate experts head-to-head like that too. And interesting that Shokosugi seems to be a little bit taller than Van Damme. Van Damme, I think, is 5'11 or something like that. But Shokosugi is well over 6 foot. So it's interesting, too. Trading the kicks and stuff like that. Van Damme still doing a lot of the cartwheel kicking, spin kicks, whatever you want to call it, too. Very interesting. Then, of course, 1989, starring opposite, of course, Rutger Hauer at the end of Blind Fury as basically the swordsman that gets hired to take on the Zatoichi of Rutger Hauer. A fun movie. And, of course, the swordplay at the end was really well done. There's kind of a, I think, particular, the way show worked on that movie, too. He's very serious swordsman, obviously, too, in it. But, there's sort of the dry humor going on throughout the entire film. So it plays well when people are going 100 mile an hour into the role and doing it well. And then, of course, Journey of Honor, which we've talked about before. Of course, Shogun Maeda out here in Australia, and that was out in 1991. Now, this is a bit of a period epic where a samurai, Daigoro Maeda, basically travels to, I think it was Spain in that one, and we get to see it basically from the samurai's perspective, going to a different country in that Renaissance time, or whatever you want to call it, and really showing his swordplay, his customs, culture, everything to a different culture like that too. It's, you know, it's a man out of time sort of idea or a story point, but it's also one where we get to see two cultures coming together, and really an interesting film of what it is too. He also did in 93 The Drug Connection, playing Larry Mutsada, and of course The Fighter King, The Fighting King in 94 as director. Now, then he took a bit of a break, and we didn't see him again until The Scorpion King, where he played a Taiko choreographer. Sorry, he did the Taiko choreography in it. And that's basically what he's been up to in between, is doing stuff outside of action films up until Ninja Assassin. So it's interesting that he sort of, you know, put it aside to do something completely different. Obviously, in television, he was on The Master, which if you haven't seen, obviously, that's the Lee Van Cleef show. He was the double, basically, on the show as well, playing Akasa as well. He's done a number of different TV shows right through to the mid-2000s as well. So you've got to check it out. Obviously, he also put out some great videos as well. Masterclass he put out in 85, and he's basically the ninja in himself in that too. He also did Ninja Theater, and then he did Shokusugi Institute, where he produced videos there too, and much, much more. Again, you know, it's really interesting that he's also always been sort of putting out different stuff to really show with the ninja, and of course martial arts action films are all about choreography, stuff like that too. So again, I've always loved obviously his form too. Obviously he's got a very, very sort of rigid, strong form in each of the poses and stuff like that, and different looks that he has when he does the martial arts itself. It's very strong, flexible, and of course, you know, I think at the end of the day too, he takes into those roles and just pushes the martial arts with the character twinge as well. Whatever he's working on as a character goes into not only the role itself, but also how the body mechanics work, and everything from Enter the Ninja on, you really get to see that too. And also his master play and stuff like things, I think, and Black Eagle in particular too, because it's moving beyond just doing the ninja films and stuff like that, and playing a father as well in it, which is great. We get to see, obviously, too, in that one, Shane and Kane in it as well. And they're basically under threat at one stage there, where obviously the bad guys are trying to get a hold of them as a sort of a ransom or whatever you call it. But Sho is able to, of course, get through and stop that happening as well. Again, great film, great for what it was at the time. And I just can't wait to see that on Blu-ray whenever it arrives here too. Again, it's pretty good on streaming, but there's nothing like Blu-ray, folks. It's high def. But, you know, let us know in the comments what your favourite Shokusugi films are. You know, was it Enter the Ninja? Was it Revenge of the Ninja? They're the two most popular I've found in anyone that we've talked to on the show when it comes to that sort of time in, obviously, his life and vice versa. He's always been, from those films, probably the most popular too. And then you also got, of course, Pray for Death, which is one that always comes up as a fan favourite as well too. Shogun Maeda, I want to see what people think of that film too. I think, again, it's at a height of martial arts action cinema and epic cinema that really, again, needs, I think, you know, a second look at, because it is a great film. We get to see, obviously, you know, the two cultures coming together, and really get to see interesting different perspectives on swordplay in that as well too. I've always thought that that sort of film comes together quite well. Kind of, in some ways, kind of reminds me of The Last Samurai, and sort of bringing two worlds together, seeing, you know, the warriors on different continents, you know, basically trade the different styles that they do and talk about, you know, what it is to be a warrior. True samurai to serve, you know, retainers and all that sort of stuff. Very, very interesting. Shokusugi, I think for me, the ultimate film is going to go to, of course, Pray for Death. I love that film. I think it's at the right height. It's just the right amount of martial arts. It's just the right amount of action. Good bad guys in it as well. And I think, too, just the speed and the length. The length of that film is just right. We're at a time where 1980s, a lot of films were literally, you know, 90 minutes, 75 or something. You know, hour and 10 minutes, vice versa. So worth checking out, too. So, but let us know what you think of Shokusugi's films. Obviously, let us know which ones you'd like us to cover as a special in here too. I can definitely tell you we're definitely doing an Enter the Ninja special, or even just the Ninja trilogy itself. We'll probably look at that in greater depth, look at the cast, look at obviously too, where shot locations, all that sort of stuff, all here on the show, and that'll be up probably late September, early October here on the show. But anyway, coming to the end of the show, ninjutsu, it's fun, it's cool, and all the different martial arts, obviously, that we see on screen here too. Shokuzuki's done a fantastic job of letting us know what they're all about and putting them in play in these great action films. I hope you enjoy them. I do too. I'm Adam Ryan, the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you next time here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast, looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good